Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
We're going to make Greenland great again, baby. That's right. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. And thanks for hanging out with me this afternoon. I appreciate it. Very, very much. And in case you're just joining us, first of all, where you been? Secondly, I'm doing this show today from an undisclosed medical facility where I've been getting IV antibiotics. So, you know, I had this foot surgery done about a month ago, and it got infected. And then it got infected again. Well, now the infection, they think, might possibly be in the bone. So I had to go to the ER yesterday. I was feeling really lightheaded and confused, and I had chills, and that's never a good sign. So went to the ER, and they admitted me into the hospital, gave me antibiotics intravenously, and tomorrow I have to get surgery, basically, to reopen the cut, you know, the... And there's an implant they put in there. They got to take that out. It's a whole to-do, yada, 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 not for nothing. Anyway, I will be off tomorrow, and I'll be off on Friday, but... Today I wanted to do the show, even though I have an IV on and I'm getting antibiotics and fun painkillers. Yes, it's making the whole dry January thing a lot easier. But no, I wanted to be here with you today because I hate being off. You know, I mean, you make your jokes, you lie your little jokes about summer Fridays, and I get it. I deserve it because many times I do take off on Friday during the summer. But the truth is I love my job and I love what I do. And I love the fact that thank you to Barrett Media today for recognizing me as one of the top 10 hosts in the country for Major Market Afternoon Drive. I believe I came in at number 7, which is pretty cool. Anyway, thanks to Lupe for jumping in yesterday and then, you know, some fill-in hosts on Thursday and Friday. I don't know who's in yet exactly, but either way, that's what I'll be doing, and hopefully it all goes well. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm in good hands. At some point, I'll tell you the name of this undisclosed medical facility. They're not the ones who did the original procedure on my foot. I should have gone to them first. I'll just say this. Cooper did not do my foot the first time, and I should have gone to Cooper because then everything would have went fine, and I would not be in this situation today where I have to get all these intravenous antibiotics, but... you know, that's for another day to deal with that. Why didn't I? Because I don't know. I didn't think podiatry, Cooper, they have a department. I should know better, but it really does matter who you choose as your doctor. It really does. It definitely matters, and it's worth doing your research, and shame on me for not doing a better job of doing research, and shame on me for not going to Cooper. This is what I should have done in the first place. Anyway, so... That's what that has to happen. And you know, with these things, you never know. You don't want to mess around with sepsis. That's when your body starts going crazy and then it gets into your blood and, you know, then you could die. So the minute I started feeling lightheaded and confused, which I often do feel confused, as you know. I mean, most of my life with 3 children is a very confusing place to be, particularly with my 4-year-old domestic terrorist, Reagan. But I said, something's not right here. And I was so cold the night before that I had chills. I got into a hot, steaming hot shower. Now, you have to realize, I am never, ever cold. Like, my wife is freezing all the time, but I'm always hot. So I, like, in our house, for example, I mean, I don't like pushing the heat up in the winter above 65. And then when it's over 65, I'm in shorts and a t-shirt. And at night, I basically have like a sheet, you know, and I don't pajamas or anything like that. So for me to be that cold, and I got into a steaming hot shower. I like hot showers like the next guy, but I mean, this was cranked up way higher than even my wife would have it cranked up. And I still could not warm up. And then my foot was just in so much pain. And I said, all right, I got to do something about this. So the doctor said, you should probably go to the ER. And then I got here, and I'm a bit of a hypochondriac, as you know. So I asked I polled all the doctors. I said, was it a good call that I came in? They said, yeah, absolutely. You definitely should have come in. So that's good. So they started with the IV antibiotics right away. And I started, and I've been feeling a lot better. That and the morphine, the Dilaudid, which is just a, anyway. So they have to do the little surgery on it tomorrow. And then I should be good to go. Hopefully, knock on wood, that everything will go fine. In the meantime, though, I finished Yellowstone, finally. And I'm waiting patiently for the next episode of Landman. And we got the Eagles game on Sunday. I'm excited about that. I've been wearing my Eagles hat at the hospital, so every doctor or nurse keeps asking me about my thoughts on the game. And they know I'm a radio host, and I guess they don't know what my genre is because they are asking the wrong person. I'm like, yeah, we're going to do great on Sunday against the team that we're playing on Sunday. Packers? Right. Yes. And, of course, as we discussed earlier, Jalen Hurts. So there's that, you know. But no, it's going to be a good weekend. It's going to be fun. And I'll tell you something else, too. I love Greenland. No, I do. It's snowy there, you know. Iceland is not, and Greenland is. And I know this because my wife does some work with Icelandic Provisions as a yogurt company, Skier. And she's probably going to go to Iceland over the summer. No, I mean, the whole family. We might go to Iceland. It might be a cool trip. But Iceland is not the icy one. Greenland is. Iceland's very green. I know it's misnamed. But anyway, this whole idea of Iceland and buying Iceland and or Greenland, I should say. And then why would we do that? Why would we do such a thing? There are strategic interests to doing so. We're not going to invade it. We're not going to conquer it militarily. I love how the left is freaking out about this. Right? Well, Trump's going to invade Greenland and conquer it. I don't really think that's exactly what he's talking about here. But here's Senator John Fetterman. I'm going to call him Fetterman now because honestly, he's been impressing me a lot lately. And I want to get him on the show. And Matt DeSantis needs to get him on the show because he's making a lot of sense, saying a lot of things like this.
Trump. You think there'll be more of these parts?
Go ahead. Can you talk about, like, there's a lot of talk about Greenland, for example. Now, and I know there's a lot of freakouts, you know, and of course I would never support taking it by force. But I do think it's a responsible conversation if they were open to acquiring it and, you know, whether just buying it outright. I mean, if anyone think that's bonkers, it's like, well, remember the Louisiana purchase? Well, I think Alaska was a great deal, too. $50 million, I think it was. It was referred to as Seward's Folly, and now that was Alaska now. So, I mean, you know, open to having all kinds of conversations as well. And now I don't think it's not helpful to freak out, but some things might work out, some may not, but that's part of an ongoing dialogue. But he hasn't even taken office in 2 weeks, and, you know, we really need to pace ourselves if we're going to freak out over every last tweet or every last conversation or press conference.
That's a good one, John. I like it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, you know, we are here to work together.
Yeah.
And some things you can agree or disagree, but I think that's how DC works.
And you all have a great.
There are strategic military reasons and strategic resource reasons why the United States would want Greenland. Now, think of how Alaska worked out for us. I know the left keeps trying to stop oil drilling, but Alaska is an incredibly oil-rich state in the United States of America. And that's really important to note. Now, Trump won't rule out military action in Greenland, but you got to understand something. He won't rule out anything. That's just his whole thing. I remember when Chris Wallace asked him back in 2015, would you rule out using nuclear weapons? And he was like, why would I rule out using nuclear weapons? I'm not going to rule out anything. He's a guy that wants all options on the table because he knows that when you're negotiating, it's not a bad thing if the other person at the other end of the table thinks you're crazy and thinks you'll do whatever to get what you want. That's a position you want to be in. If you start a negotiation where you've already taken things off the table, well, then crazy people are not going to be afraid of you. See, I know everybody back in 2015 was like, oh my gosh, he's not reasonable. Reasonable people would already rule out using nuclear weapons. You don't want Putin, Kim Jong-un, whoever, crazy people thinking that, well, he's already taken it off the table, so we don't have to worry about that. No, no, you want them thinking this guy is so nuts. He's nuts. You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. He'll first strike your ass. You want them thinking that. And you know, it's not a bad thing to make. He's not going to invade Greenland, but would it take us 15 minutes to conquer it? Right, honestly, but we could probably take Greenland and Canada at the same time. I've seen the movie Canadian Bacon with John Candy. I know what I'm talking about here. I'm basically an expert. We could conquer both in like a half hour, 30 minutes. But you don't rule things out. That's Trump's entire point. You just don't rule things out. At more than three times the size of Texas, Greenland's ample deposits in rare earths, that's minerals, gas and oil, as well as its commanding position astride crucial trade and military arteries, have made it a focal point for major rival powers, including the United States, China, and Russia. Greenland's rising profile reflects the larger global scramble for the Arctic as climate change opens maritime routes and reorders geopolitics at the time of the world. The top of the world, excuse me. Russia reopened dozens of Soviet military bases in the Arctic as tensions with the West worsened over the invasion of Ukraine. China has pursued expanding shipping routes through the region's melting ice and exploiting Greenland's natural resources, including minerals used in everything from phones to electric cars and military equipment. We need it for national security, Trump said Tuesday, refusing to rule out using military force to seize control of Greenland as well as of the Panama Canal. The president-elect's latest comments, this is the Wall Street Journal, sparked outrage among some officials and lawmakers in Europe, in particular Denmark, Greenland's former colonial ruler but still governs foreign and security policy on the island and is a close U.S. ally. On Wednesday, outgoing Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the idea about Greenland wasn't a good one, but maybe more importantly, it's obviously one that's not going to happen, so we probably shouldn't waste a lot of time talking about it. Why do you say it's not going to happen? So that's the other thing that people with vision who are great business people and negotiators have is a mindset of anything's possible. Why would you immediately start the conversation by saying it's not going to happen? Why? Also, too, when you think about the military context of Greenland and having the presence up there, when you think of Russia and what they want to strategically achieve, the question for the United States of America is not, should we acquire Greenland? It's, should we acquire Greenland for the purpose of protecting vital interests of the United States and for those NATO lovers out there, NATO, against the advancing encroachment by Russia and China on strategic mineral and oil and natural gas rich places, and also places for strategically launching, say, submarines. Trump's national security team has held preliminary talks about how to begin negotiations with Greenland and Denmark once he takes office. The U.S. already has a presence on the island with what is its northernmost base, the Pudafik Space Base, formerly known as Thule Air Base. It includes a radar station that is part of the United States Ballistic Missile Early Warning System. There you go. But the freak out to me is amazing. The freak out is amazing. And on CNN, they had a freak out about this, too. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, as I look for this, as I look at the freak out, I keep thinking to myself, do these people always go to the absolute panic mode? Like every single time their default is panic. You know what I mean? Default is panic and freak out and go, oh, my God, Donald Trump is crazy. Donald Trump's insane. And of course, the Danish prime minister is going to say Greenland is not for sale. Why would he say otherwise, or she say otherwise? Is it still the hot? It's not the hot one anymore, right? Of course you're going to say that, because you don't start the negotiation by going, yeah, what do you want for, like $20? This isn't selling Manhattan here. But here's a CNN freakout clip for you.
But America is not an expansionist military power, not in the 21st century.
Why?
Because that's
why not?
Because that's not the world that we live in.
Oh, wait, hold on, Scott. You answer that question.
Yes.
Why is the United States not?
So you're for attacking Greenland?
Why is the United States not an expansionist military power?
I said you're open to the idea of attacking Greenland.
We created.
No, we don't need to attack Greenland. We could buy it.
We can't buy it. It's not up for sale. So what you're saying is not true.
World order.
Nothing. Everything's not for sale until it is.
Hang on, Scott. We helped create a world order.
Let's just think about that for a second. That point about Greenland's not for sale, everything's for sale. Somebody once told me that. They were talking about buying something, and they said, well, it's not for sale. Well, everything's for sale. It's just a matter of the right price. How many times have you heard people tell a story of they went and they found their dream house, and they knocked on the door and said, I know this house is not for sale, quote unquote, but we'd love to buy it from you. It's our dream house. And the guy's like, all right, what do you want for it? Or they write a letter, you know, dear owner of whatever, like the creepy watcher, right? We'd love to buy your house. So if you ever want to sell it, could you call us first? And the guy reads the letter and he's like, what the hell? Let's move to Florida. Let's sell the house. It's technically not for sale, but it is for sale because everything's for sale. Everything is for sale. And that's the point he's making. But of course, the myopic thinking of the people on the CNN panel is that, well, no, the Danish prime minister said it's not for sale. Therefore, it's never going to be for sale. The only way we get it is if we invade militarily. This is also, you know, he's Hitler. You see, he's going to invade Greenland like Hitler invaded Poland. They want their fantasy to come true. This, by the way, is the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com, with two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Start 2025 with a beautiful smile that you deserve from my buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria. All right, let's continue with the CNN clip, please.
Which we said, you cannot just decide you want that country and then take your military and go into that country and take it, okay? So that is the era of not being in an expansionist military era for the United States. And you're saying that's not true. Why is it not true?
Well, I mean, you can think small if you want to. I think Trump's thinking big, and he's thinking about U.S. interests. There are U.S. interests in Greenland. They have rare earth minerals. We already have some kind of space facility there, and it would help fortify us against the Russians. The Panama Canal is, of course, of interest when you consider the Chinese incursions and influence in this hemisphere. What Donald Trump is saying to the world is, we are not a shrinking violet anymore. We are the United States of America. We are the preeminent superpower. And reporters keep asking him to rule things out and take things off the table. And it would be the height of stupidity to do so now or to anything else before he takes office. Why would he tell the rest of the world what he may or may not do?
Here's one reason why.
That was Scott Jennings, by the way. See, they want, for this perspective of the CNN people, understand why the answer to that question is because they believe there should be this world order where everybody sits down together and we all hold hands and sing kumbaya. That's not how the real world works, though. There are tyrants. There are bad people out there. There are people that abuse people's humanitarian rights. This vision the left has always had, whether it's Woodrow Wilson and the League of Nations, or it's today the United Nations, which, of course, harbors some of the worst human beings and ideas, tyrannical ideas on the planet. This idea, we all sit down together as one world, you know, we all hold hands and we are the world. And that is nonsense. But they believe that. Now, that's their mindset. So why should Trump rule it out? Because he should rule it out because the world should hold hands and sing. That's not how you do things. And he knows that as a business guy, you don't rule anything out. You want all options on the table, and you want the person to think that they are coming to the table in a weak negotiating position because the guy across the table is a badass who's going to stop at nothing and getting what he wants. Take a listen to this.
To Greenland and the Panama Canal, so forth. Can you assure the world that as you try to get control of these areas, you are not going to use military or economic coercion?
No.
And can you tell us a little bit about what your plan is?
No.
Are you going to negotiate a new treaty? Are you going to ask the Canadians to hold a vote? What is the strategy?
Yeah, I can't assure you. You're talking about Panama and Greenland. No, I can't assure you on either of those two. But I can say this. We need them for economic security. The Panama Canal was built for our military. I'm not going to commit to that now. It might be that.
See, he doesn't rule things out. That's the key. He doesn't do that. They just can't. They can't fathom that idea. It's like, oh, you're gonna be a scary man. You see, we told you. But I don't think he also really has interest in making Canada the 51st state. But it's fun hazing the little man child bastard Justin Trudeau, isn't it? And it's fun just watching that entire process play out. I don't really think Trump has any real inclination to want to take over Canada. But it's fun to mess with them, isn't it? I mean, it really is. It's fun to mess with them. And the U.S. influence that Trump is imagining now, a sphere of United States influence stretching from Panama to Greenland, is what presidents should be thinking about from a visionary perspective. No, he's not going to conquer Greenland militarily. No, he's not going to go down and invade Panama. The point about this, of course, is that he wants the world to believe he's capable of anything, because that is what keeps crazy people in their lane. Here's a video that was shared by Trump on Truth Social where the president-elect vowed to protect and cherish Greenland when it becomes part of the United States. So a Greenland man throws on a MAGA hat and tells Donald Trump to buy it. Listen to this.
Like, if you could tell Trump anything, what would it be?
Buy us.
Buy Greenland?
Buy Greenland.
Why do you want Trump to buy Greenland?
Because we don't want to be colonized by Danish government anymore. We get ripped every year about our minerals from Greenland. We are the richest nation in the world, and we don't get to use it. Denmark's using us too much.
Do you like America?
I love America. But people are too fed over there.
He wants to be an American, baby. We'll take him. All right, more to come in our fourth and final hour here right now. Let's talk about Trump's sentencing as he asks the United States Supreme Court to block his sentencing, which is absolutely ridiculous that they want to go forward with this. Absolutely insane. Political weaponization at its worst. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, baby. All right. We're rolling along here. Almost to the end of the show. And like I said, I'll be off on Thursday and Friday recovering from surgery tomorrow. But you'll be in good hands with whoever is going to be in. I should probably check that. Anyway, Trump's sentencing. Here's the thing about this, and here's the incredible frustration about this, is that this judge is hell-bent on making sure that the president of the United States is a, quote-unquote, convicted felon. Now, this is purely for political reasons. There's no justice reason why this should be occurring, none whatsoever. It's out of the realm of justice to be doing this to the former and future president of the United States of America, who is literally the president-elect, certified by the Congress as the winner of the Electoral College. There is no justification for this whatsoever. And that's the problem. The problem is that you know as well as I do that this is purely political. And it's the weaponization of the justice system that we have seen, which helped Trump win. It helped solidify his victory. And look, John Fetterman is right. You know, either Democrats decide to work with this guy or they're going to keep losing. Democrats either decide to work with this guy or they will keep losing. That's the bottom line. There's no other way to get through this point. There's no other way for you to understand this other than what John Fetterman said. If we keep being the party of the opposition, if we keep just standing up there and trying to block everything this guy does, we will continue to lose. And he's right. Because the American people voted for Donald Trump. He won the Electoral College, he won the popular vote, and they want to see things done. They want to see things get done. They don't want to have a situation where they watch as Democrats do nothing other than obstruct. And it's frustrating because you've got John Fetterman sounding like the voice of reason because the party is so freaking crazy that a guy who had a stroke is now the voice of reason in the Democrat Party. Think about that. Here's a little bit about what John Fetterman said regarding Trump's nominees and working with them and making sure that things get done for the American people and why it has to happen that way and why it's so important that it happens that way.
To get working and to actually produce results for the American people.
Senator Fetterman, you've met with a number of nominees already. You've suggested...
Just did one of your former colleagues here just about 3 hours ago.
Is that right?
Sean Duffy, actually.
Oh, Sean Duffy. Yeah. Senator Warner, the chair of the co-chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, met with Tulsi Gabbard. He said he had a session with Ms. Gabbard. He went on with a lot of questions. He's still got a lot of questions, and that we have to do a process, a beginning of a process, suggesting that there's a long way to go. Is this Tulsi Gabbard one of the nominees that you could vote for?
Well, I met with her. In fact, I think I've met with virtually all of them. And the ones that I haven't, they're on my schedule, RFK and Governor Noem. I'm happy to meet with all of them. And that's also part of this. I don't know why that was controversial. I mean, I got a lot of blowback just, even to meet with them. And to me, I see that as just doing my job. And I'm going to have a conversation with anyone that would like to have a conversation with me. And if someone believed everything that's been written or said about me was true, I mean, you can't possibly know me, or I think I could know her either, just based on someone read. But I want to sit down and have a conversation, and I'm really glad that I've done that. And some of these nominees I'm going to vote for already. In fact, whether it's our colleague Rubio, Representative Stefanik, or even Sean Duffy, I expect to vote for him as well too, and Brooke Rollins for agriculture.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them I can say right now here on Fox, I'm going to vote for them. And there's others, but that we're going to go through the process. But I'm open to hear from everyone. And I don't know why that's controversial. And I also would like to remind everyone on the Democratic side, that's the way democracy works. Trump won, and now they're going to run the table. And so they get to pick those kinds of people. And if you don't have to agree with all of it, but I want to find a way to work together on a bunch of them.
And I want to commend him on that, because that's the way it should be. Article 2, Section 2, sitting down, asking questions, understanding the vision.
That's Senator Katie Britt. Look, he's right. But the fact that that's the outlier position of the Democrats, Fetterman is the outlier. He's the guy who's saying these things, and that is considered now to be an outlier opinion that makes a news cut. It really shouldn't be a news clip. Think about it. There was a time when a statement like that would be so innocuous, it wouldn't make news. The fact that in this day and age, a Democrat is saying, I'm going to vote for Trump's nominee, I'm going to vote for Hitler's nominees. And of course, Fetterman said, stop calling him Hitler. It's nonsense. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. It's dumb. We sound dumb doing it. The fact that that makes news in this day and age should tell you everything about where the Democrat Party is. Everything. And for me, personally, as I look at this, I keep thinking to myself one thing, and that's a very, very important point, which is this. Democrats understand that their base does not want to work with Trump. And all they care about is their base, which is a small base, a very, very small, loud base. But you see, in order to become president, you have to win over that base. That's why so many of them who have sights on the White House are acting this way, where they only want to cater to the crazy fringe, because the crazy fringe is who votes in the primaries in Iowa and South Carolina, and that's who they're trying to impress. And until they get out of their own way, they're never going to win. Because, yeah, you might win your crazy fringe base, but that this election showed us that's a very small amount of people on the coasts and in colleges. That's it. That's all we're talking about here. Charlemagne the God said it. Trump shows us what's possible as president. That's why people like him. That's why people want to back the guy.
Donald Trump shows me what's politically possible. Trump shows me what presidents can do if they want to do it. Donald Trump shows me what can be said if you are willing to say it. It's not about what can't be done. It's about who has the political will to do it. I don't want to hear a peep from Democrats about nothing until they get the balls to say what's really on their mind in regards to this country and this world. Trump doesn't care if it sounds ridiculous. Trump doesn't care if it makes sense. It's no political correctness whatsoever. As I've been saying for years, the language of politics is dead. And Donald Trump killed it.
There you go. Boom. But you want to hear the language of politics, though? Then listen to whiny Chuck Schumer. Whiny Chuck Schumer, as he talks about, he'll work with Trump on... My favorite is Trump going, we're going to rename the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. I love that. It's not going to be the Gulf of Mexico anymore. It's the Gulf of America, baby. All right? It's the Gulf of America. Boom. I like that. That's just a baller move, isn't it? Just a baller move. It's like, no. What are we calling Mexico for? So here's whiny Chuck Schumer. I think he just had one of his frozen burgers.
Now, finally, I want to make a few brief comment about the president-elect's press conference yesterday. Donald Trump throws out a lot of strange and rather random ideas on a regular basis. He did it yesterday when suggesting we rename the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. Well, let me say this.
Yes.
I'd agree to working with Donald Trump on renaming the Gulf of Mexico.
Good.
Only if he first agrees to work with us on an actual plan to lower costs for Americans.
I see what you did there.
The American people want us to focus on first, not on renaming bodies of water.
By the way, how long does it take to rename a body of water? Like 5 seconds? I mean, what is it? What does that take? This is the old political way of speaking that Charlemagne the God's talking about. What does it take to rename a body of freaking water? Like a total of, all right, everybody in favor of changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, raise your hand. Done. Boom. Done. But you see, in Schumer's mind, the way of the world is it's committees and it's assignments and blah, 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 blah. Dude, this is why you guys keep losing. This is why you can't get out of your own freaking way, man. It's amazing to me, isn't it? They just cannot get out of their own way. So they're going to wind up being a minority party for a long time to come. That's it. That's it. Because they can't go against their base. To go against their crazy base, they wind up getting blasted by the likes of Will Bunch in the Philadelphia Inquirer, who nobody reads. They wind up getting blasted by Joy Reid, the lunatics that have no audience. It's not where the American people are. But they are terrified of upsetting their base. So keep catering to them. Keep catering to the crazy, and all you're going to get is crazy voting for you and nobody else. Bottom line, fine with me. All right, more to come in our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Keep the conversation going, of course, on X at Rich Zeoli. Coming right back.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Let's turn our attention, shall we, to an announcement that was made yesterday by Mark Zuckerberg, which is that Meta, the parent company of Facebook, they are going to make changes to restore free speech online. Here to talk about it with me is Dan Schneider. Dan is the vice president of the Media Research Center and leader of the Free Speech Alliance. Dan, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me here in Philadelphia. How are you doing?
Hey, Rich. It's great talking to you in Philly, the home of the Blue Horizon. If you love boxing, the Blue Horizon was the mecca of boxing for so long.
Look at that. I mean, you bring something that everybody talks about, the Eagles and the Phillies. You're talking about boxing. I like it.
If you've ever been to the Blue Horizon, it was amazing. I don't think they hold fights there anymore. But the biggest fight that we just won was just when Mark Zuckerberg threw up the white towel and said, "I surrender." And truly, Facebook has done an about face. This is not just a sideshow. It's real. They made instant changes. All those fact checkers all over the world that were getting millions and millions of dollars from Facebook, they woke up Tuesday morning to discover that they were out of jobs. It was an immediate termination. It was delicious.
It was delicious. And just to give a little history of this, little context, Dan, what was Meta and Facebook doing in the past that led to this complete 180 here?
Well, look, Facebook started to really interfere in our elections in about 2015. And we've documented all the many treasonous and torturous things that they were doing against Republicans, against conservatives, silencing. Marsha Blackburn couldn't run pro-life ads in her campaign, and it goes on and on. And they were colluding with foreign governments to try to figure out how to silence conservatives. So the sins of Facebook run deep. They really do. Yet at the same time, it's going to sound like I'm contradicting myself here. At the same time, when I would meet with the executives of various big tech platforms, it was the Facebook people, at least the ones I met with, who seemed to be most interested in trying to figure out how they could become fair. So it used to be that the number two person at Facebook, Sheryl Sandberg, and then the number three person, Nick Clegg, that they really called the shots there. And they are radicals. Sheryl Sandberg is a radical woke monster. And Nick Clegg, he was the Labour Party chief in the UK. You know, he ran the Labour Party in the British Parliament. And these are the two people calling the shots at Facebook, at Meta. And they're now both gone, and they've been replaced by two Republicans, two well-known Republicans. Both these guys have a history of fighting for good causes. So there's real hope here that Facebook has really switched sides in this battle for the First Amendment.
I mean, that would be fantastic if that has actually occurred. I mean, that really would be a huge, huge issue. And I think, too, when you go back to COVID and you think about the weaponization and the government working with Facebook to take down people's posts, you think about what they did during the Hunter Biden laptop, the so-called fact checkers and this idea that they were going to be the arbiters of truth. And they've extended this to a variety of different things. And we knew what this was. I mean, this was censorship at its finest. And the government was pushing them. But it seemed at the time that they were more than happy to go along with the government. There was a little pushback on their end. So I guess the question I have for you, Dan, is as a person who has studied this and looked into this and has been fighting for freedom of speech, and I should mention Media Research is one of my favorite organizations out there. I think you guys do incredible work. I go to Newsbusters all the time for clips and audio for the show. You do a great job holding these people accountable. Do you think that it's just that they've realized now that they can make more money under Donald Trump, or do you really think that they have seen the light about freedom of speech?
Okay, so let me just again say, Sheryl Sandberg was a wacko. She was hard, hard left. Mark Zuckerberg, he comes out of that sort of 1980s, 1990s kind of Democrat party. You may recall Bill Clinton giving the speech, "The era of big government is over." You know, and the phrase they all used back then was, "I'm a fiscal conservative, social liberal." You know, Mark Zuckerberg really comes more out of that school, and that includes a strong belief in free speech. You know, remember, it used to be the ACLU and lefties in America who were the strongest supporters of free speech rights. That's Zuckerberg's background. He's when he started Facebook, he wanted it to be a pro-free speech place. It's only in the last 10 to 12 years where the left has just completely done a reversal on the First Amendment. And now they say, well, we have to censor speech to save speech, you know, this sort of nonsense line. And I think Zuckerberg has tried to figure out, how do I get Facebook back to where I originally conceptualized it to be? And this moment now where Trump has won re-election, and even many on the left realize that they went way over the line with their wokeism and radical agenda and DEI and censorship enterprise and all that. And what you haven't seen are mass walkouts and protests at Meta. The Meta employees are still working and drawing a check. I think he took advantage of this moment to try to get Facebook back to where he wanted it to be. Now, at the same time, Donald Trump is out there saying he wants to incarcerate Mark Zuckerberg for life. So Donald Trump's putting pressure on him. So there's two things going on here. Plus, it's just good business to try to expand your consumer base.
So yeah, yeah.
I think Mark Zuckerberg is in the free speech movement for the long haul. That's my guess.
I hope so. And it's a great point that you make about him originally being there. And it seems like so many of these tech companies, when Elon Musk took over Twitter and then changed it into a free speech platform, and they saw the success of that, there was still a little pullback. Trump wins. They all rush down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring. And maybe their eyes opened up and said, wow, you know, there's Trump won all these votes, and he was out there being a diehard advocate for freedom of speech, freedom of expression. And hey, maybe in this country, a lot of moms and dads in the suburbs got sick of being censored during COVID, got sick of being told what they could and couldn't say. And they want that. They want the ability to express themselves. We got to catch on here. We're going to wind up like MSNBC and CNN. We're not going to have any customers.
Yeah. 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 And then more and more information started to come out. And I like to think that MRC was largely responsible for this.
Absolutely.
But all of the censorship initiatives out of the Biden administration, where we uncovered documents showing how DHS and the White House were using our tax dollars that were supposed to be to stop terrorists at the border, but instead were being used to train people on how to infiltrate organizations like the Heritage Foundation and Prager University. you know, calling them neo-Nazis. I mean, it was outrageous. And so many other censorship initiatives out of this administration. And, like, nobody, no rational American, left or right, believes that our government should exist to censor political opponents. It was just, it was crazy things coming out of this administration. So there's a moment here where we can recalibrate and return to normalcy.
Do you think, Dan, in looking at all of the things that this administration has done in censorship and the bullying, and remember when they had Nita Jankowicz, of course, and this whole idea of the disinformation czar, are there any moments where the corporate media stood up and said, enough is enough, and fought back? Because it seems like they always not only went along with this, they did the government's bidding and helped with the censorship.
There's one. There's one corporation that stood up and said no. If you look at the five big telecom companies, the telco companies, AT&T, Sprint, Verizon, Charter Communications said no. We're not going to do it. We are not going to censor people. We are not going to get involved in this DEI stuff. Our job is to provide good telephone service and nothing more. Charter deserves a lot of credit to standing up to the mob, standing up to Biden. But all the big banks, they caved. They gave Biden, DOJ, all the data that DOJ demanded, you know, about people who bought Bibles or guns from Cabela's. You know, all the big corporations caved. They did everything that the woke mob and the Biden administration asked them to do or told them to do. I can't think of another company other than Charter. And then there's a bank out of Oklahoma now called Old Glory Bank. You know, they started because they want to protect people from these sorts of abuses. But, you know, there's so few courageous people out there.
Yeah, they really are. Dan, I appreciate the great work you guys do over there. Keep it up, and please come back on the show. I think we're going to have a great 4 years of freedom of speech, a great 4 years of fighting for the First Amendment. Keep up the great work. The corporate media is paying the price thanks to people like yourself and everybody over at the Media Research Center. So thank you. Dan Schneider, Vice President of Media Research Center, leader of the Free Speech Alliance. Follow Dan on X at Schneider_DC. Thank you, Dan.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.